When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I think it's funny, you guys both making it in right as the show started. That is not your fault. We're going to put that on Terry, as Terry is famously late for the halftime show, usually anywhere between 4 and 5 minutes. And now he's trying to make you guys late for the Gamecock Central Takeover Hour.
We've been here. We've been here.
I know. I saw you walking in like
we've been here
45 minutes ago. I'm like, wow, Wes is here really early today.
Wes beat me here.
Yeah, this beautiful view of Gervais behind you. Oh, I like your TEC equipment rental.
TEC hat. Equipment rental. Appreciate it. Yeah, that's right. They gave me some free hats on Friday.
We're up there plotting out, you know, some spring game stuff, just like the Gamecock football team.
Spring game is here.
It's here.
Spring game
it's game
here.
Week.
Yes.
Started off game week with a nice parade yesterday, which I saw Chris Clark was out at. Got a nice photo up on the Gamecock or the 107.5 The Game Twitter page, hanging out with the family.
Yes.
We good time.
There, everybody else in Columbia was there, too.
God. It seemed that way. It certainly
what
seemed that way.
What do y'all think about, Wes, you went to the last one, too, right? I was not able to make it.
I don't think I made the last one. I think I made the one before that.
I made the 2017 one. That's the one I went to. So, a lot more people this time, I feel like.
I think it's estimated like 16,000.
Yeah, I mean,
somewhere around there.
There were way more people. This like Main Street could barely contain the amount of people that were out there. It was absolutely insane.
Was the last one? Was it during the week? The last time was like a midweek type thing.
From, I personally don't remember this, but when we were talking the other day about when will the parade be, somebody told me they thought it was Friday last time.
Okay, yeah, that's. I guess a little better than like a Tuesday or Wednesday, but when the weather is perfect and you have the opportunity to get more people out there, you're certainly going to get a good turnout. And it looked like a fantastic one. Again, people lining the streets all over the State House and, you know, capping off what was a perfect season for the Gamecock women.
Yeah, I think they clearly wanted to go for the weekend this time. Originally, they were trying to have it on Saturday. They ended up having to get Sunday. I think that was because of getting the actual just logistics of the permit and all that stuff you have to do. But yeah, people wall to wall. And I mean, guys, you can already tell from their comments when they returned back to CLA and then the comments in front of the State House yesterday, they're already thinking repeat. Like this is a quick turn. Your mindset. Yeah. You get to enjoy it. You get to enjoy the spoils of going undefeated, but you can tell, maybe not in the forefront, but in the back of their minds, they're already thinking about what next year could mean.
So I dug into this a little bit. Some interesting comparisons between the last team that repeated as undefeated national champions and what South Carolina potentially to this upcoming season.
Been doing some research?
Yes, I have. So it was the 08-09 UConn team and then the 09-2010 UConn team. Both those teams went undefeated on the national championship. After the 09 season, UConn only lost one player to the WNBA draft, the fourth overall pick in Renee Montgomery. Camila Cardoso projected to potentially be the fourth overall pick coming up tonight. A lot of similarities there.
How about the quick turnaround for Camila?
What a weekend.
Yeah. I mean, and that was, I'm glad she got to be there yesterday. I think there was some concern, at least from fans. I don't know if this was behind the scenes as well, but there was some concern for fans that she might not be able to be at the parade, because obviously the draft is today, and she's going to be picked, I mean, I would say anywhere from 2 to 5.
Somewhere in the top 5.
And 4 is the one you've seen it, I would say, probably the most. But, I could see her. I was talking about that with Liv Thompson. I could see her maybe sliding up even from that. Obviously, we know Caitlin Clark's going first. But after that, I think it could go any number of different ways. And it was awesome. I don't know if this was the case for the entire parade, but where we were sitting, she was the one holding the trophy, and that's kind of the, if you're the senior, I think you get to hold the trophy, which was cool, and it was. Hey, how about this, y'all? I wanted to hit on this. What a flex that if you are Malaysia Fulwiley or Ashlyn Watkins, you have the whole bleeping band from your high school basically as your entrance music as you're rolling down downtown Main Street of your hometown.
Yeah, that was crazy.
That was cool. So Keenan Band is out there for Fulwiley. Cardinal Newman Band out there for Watkins. I mean,
with Watkins t-shirts on.
Yeah, you got a 38-0 Letterman's jacket on. Like, what could be cooler than having your high school band leading you down the street just for you?
Life is good for the entire team right now.
Well, and one thing that, you know, you think Dawn Staley said sometimes, like, when we recruited Aaliyah Boston, we told her, Asia Wilson, Aaliyah Boston, hey, when you come here, we are going to do this thing, right? Like, you are going to be a WNBA high draft pick. You're going to be an All-American. You're going to be beloved here. You're going to win a national championship. And you're able to look back and say, we did all those things. Now you have two pretty powerful, you know, case studies. You have more than that, but, like, these are local products too, right? These are Columbia kids. And so it's even cooler where you can look back and early in your career for Malaysia Fulwiley, very, very early, you know, you've already been able to accomplish those things as well.
Do you think you're going to be able to march down Main Street with your high school band leading the way was on the promises for Fulwiley?
I joked about that. I could see Dawn being like, yeah, when we do our parade next time, we'll let your band play. But, I mean, I don't know. But that is awesome. I mean, it is quite the flex. And the other thing, like, Tyler, that year that you brought up, UConn, you said 08-09?
Yeah.
That was Dawn Staley's first year at South Carolina also. And I was looking back this morning, I mean, to show you the type of program that she's built, you know, South Carolina women's basketball, it wasn't like it was, had never done anything at all. You know, they had a little bit of success in the past. Like, Susan Wavius had taken the team to, I think, an Elite Eight several years prior. They had a stretch under Nancy Wilson in the, I think, late 80s that was, like, pretty good. You know, they made 4 tournaments in 5 years, things like that. But when Dawn took the job, obviously it had slipped. And you didn't have – this wasn't like taking over Geno's UConn team.
Sure. You know? You weren't being handed keys to a Cadillac.
That's right. So looking back, Dawn, year one, average attendance at a game, under 2,800 people. And that was a huge jump from the year before she got there. The year before she got there, they were averaging 1,000-something fans a game.
Right.
So year one, she comes in, oh, man, it's Dawn Staley. Really turns around attendance, but 2,800 people a game. And then that her first regular season game in Columbia at home, the first home game, to Clemson, and they lost. You know, and you go 2-12 in conference, right? So just illustrated, you had a long way to go. Now fast forward to 2024, you're 38-0, you've won 3 national titles, your average attendance is 16,000 fans, and you've just finished up not only all that, but you've just played in the, you know, highest viewed, most viewed women's basketball game ever. Like, that is program building at its finest.
And I don't think anybody's going to be doubting them going into this year. They're already the betting favorite to win the national championship. Again, you're only losing Cardoso. You bring in, you know, you're returning a lot of good talent. You're bringing in a lot of good talent as well with Joyce Edwards, Madison McDaniel. You know, there's no sign of slowing down anytime soon.
There's not. I do like how the fact that Dawn Staley's program, the expectations are so high that after they lost every starter from last year, people doubting them is they got ranked 6th. Like,
yeah.
Like, think about that. Like, oh, they're doubting us.
Yep.
Still 6th despite losing every single starter. So that's really not exactly the disrespect.
It's not.
That it's made out to be. Like, it's something in the locker room, you build it up like, oh, they can't stand us. They got no respect for us. Nobody believes we can get here. And obviously, nobody was picking them necessarily as the favorite to win the title. But I think after we all saw what they did in Paris everybody was like, oh shoot, like
they're still good.
They're still well, really, really, really good.
Dawn's not going to be able to play the chip on the shoulder card like she was this past year. It's like, oh, well, they don't think you're as good as we're a season ago, only, you know, six in the AP poll or whatever it may be. So they're going to have to go into the season being the favorites and figure out whatever kind of other way to motivate from that.
Well, I think then you get into, you know, how many teams in history have done it back-to-back. This school has never done it back-to-back, so you still have something to chase. You know, hey, nobody thinks you can do it back-to-back. You know what I'm saying? Like, you got to go full-on Kirby Smart, like, all teams are picking us to be 5-7. No, nobody on the planet was picking Georgia to be 5-7. But
what's the basketball equivalent of being 5-7 or 7-5?
I don't. For South Carolina, it's losing two games, I think. I mean, they're, what, 109-3?
Yes, that's correct. That's accurate.
109-3.
Yeah.
Yep. That sounds like if you did that on a video game, they would say that it's unrealistic.
Yeah, they tell you to like bump up your difficulty setting at that point.
That is insane.
And South Carolina has their difficulty setting already set high.
Like, yep. It's already on Heisman.
the schedule that they play every year is, you know, you play SEC women's basketball, great league. And then Dawn's like, who else from the top five can we sprinkle? You know, let's take UConn and Stanford. Like, she plays the best teams and always has. You know, her first year that I just pointed out, they had to play, and I don't know what those teams lost, but as you said, UConn ended up going back-to-back. Her first year, they played all four of the teams from the previous year's Final Four, her first year. You know, so she has always, you know, done that, and that's been part of the process for building the team is the type of competition that they invite.
Absolutely. So again, a great way to cap off what was a perfect season for the Gamecock women with the parade yesterday, and hopefully many more parades to come in Dawn Staley's time here as head coach. Of course, you can always watch us on the Game TV, sponsored by our friends at Shepherd's Glass and powered by Integrated Media. Also, check us out on the 107.5 The Game app, download it on the iTunes Store or the Google Play Store, and take us with you wherever you go. Again, it is game week for the football team with spring game coming up on Saturday night. We'll start to preview that not only today, but as the week goes along, and we'll hear from Coach Beamer a couple times this week as well. You're listening to the Gamecock Central Takeover Hour presented by Firehouse Subs here on The Game. Welcome back in. Gamecock Central Takeover Hour presented by Firehouse Subs. Tyler Head, Wes Mitchell, and Chris Clark along with you here on The Game. Miners always, Palmetto Citizens Federal Credit Union Grand Slam giveaway rolls on for another week, as we are still waiting for that first Grand Slam from Gamecock Baseball. A lot of opportunities this weekend. Weren't able to cash in on those, though they did walk away with series victory down there in Gainesville. We'll get to that in a few minutes here, but go online to 107.5thegame.com and register for your chance to win the Palmetto Citizens Federal Credit Union Grand Slam giveaway. Of course, big story of the week is going to be spring game coming up on Saturday night. A couple more practices to go for spring football, and then putting a bow on it with the spring game on Saturday, and you know, finally getting our first chance from a public viewing standpoint to see what this team is as of right now. Not going to get all of our questions answered. Certainly, a lot of things still to be figured out over the course of the summer and the spring, but it'll be a good opportunity to see where things stand after 15 practices in the spring.
Yeah, it's always fun to sort of get a look at the guys and see the newcomers a little bit and actually go play ball. Obviously, you're going to get about probably two quarters of that. Then you're talking about really getting some backups and, you know, walk-ons and stuff like that in the second half. So I think to me and probably a lot of fans, I'm ready to see Lenoris. You know, we saw him in that setting last year. He made some plays, also kind of, you know, I thought looked like a true freshman, early enrollee at the time as well. And so to see him and kind of try and judge how he's come along and his maybe understanding the offense and control of the offense and all those things, you know, I think will be fun. It'll be cool to see some of these new wide receivers. Obviously, you know, you're going to be kind of spread out in terms of the two teams, like you're going to be split up. And I'll be curious to see how do they split up the various teams. Last year, they did, I would say, skew it a little bit towards Spencer and letting him get some work with some of his top guys, especially the first-team O-line. It feels like they maybe had four of the five starters, I think, with QB1 last year. So I'll be curious to see how they do that this year.
Yeah, that's a good point, because there's been so much conversation about the O-line in terms of, you know, this isn't a group where you could look at it and say that they, all right, they've gelled into here's probably who your starting five is going to be. We really don't know that. We know there have been a couple guys, probably, I don't know, what do you think, Wes, like three guys that more often than not, from what we've seen and what we've heard, have been in there the most, like right tackle Cason Henry, right guard Trowball, center for Sean Lee. That's not to say that any of those are 100% set, but it seems like we've seen that the most, whereas on the left side, been a little bit more shifting, you know, between sometimes it's been Tree Babalade lately at left tackle. Sometimes, you know, especially early in the spring, started out as Ja'Kai Moore. And we know that there's some positional versatility there with Ja'Kai too. So, you know, as they continue to gel, to try to get better, and if you're looking at it going, all right, we think Lenore Sellers is, you know, probably the guy. He's going to be your first rep guy. What do you want to do in terms of allowing him that opportunity and allowing your offensive line that opportunity too while still splitting it up?
What is the biggest question you're looking to, probably not answer this weekend, but get the most insight into on Saturday?
Yeah, I think we'll be sitting here a week from now and we'll be saying, hey, you can't put too much stock into a spring game, regardless of if it's good or bad. Personally, I'm ready to see these wide receivers just because I want to see how they move. I want to see how they separate. I think you can put a little stock into offensive playmakers and just how they look physically. Other than that, and even then, if I'm going to be completely fair, you can go back. There's been some spring practice all-stars that have gone on to do very little that next season. So even then, do you have to run it through a filter? I would say yes. Here's what I would look at. First quarter, second quarter, making plays against other first and second team guys. Mm-hmm. That maybe tells you a little bit. Even then, it's one day. It's one game. That person has to, obviously, one, stay healthy. They can't rest on their laurels of having a good spring game. They have to keep working going into the offseason. They have to not enter the transfer portal in 2024 because the window opens tomorrow.
Tomorrow.
So the window while they're playing on Saturday will be open. So that's part of the conversation, strangely. And so I think are there other schools sitting at home watching spring games going, man, that guy would look great in green?
100%.
So I think for South Carolina, is it likely in this setting, like I can already tell you some of the conversation on Sunday morning, is it likely in this setting that the O-line is going to look fantastic? I would probably say no. So that's going to be a big part of the conversation. Also, how much do they allow the quarterbacks to get hit, mm-hmm, and run around and are plays blown dead? And how do those things factor into how this thing plays out as well?
Yeah, I would echo you there in terms of wide receiver. I think there have been a lot of times, we hear this every year, whether it's a running back or a receiver, why is such and such not playing more? He looked great in the spring game. And again, you do have to apply that filter because if you go back, and not trying to, you know, diminish anybody's effort, but like if you go back and, well, that guy caught a touchdown in the spring game over, you know, a walk-on. It's a little different than going out and, you know, playing Georgia or something. You know, you're right. You can take some things away, especially with how a guy looks physically. How does he catch the ball? What's he look like in the open field? You got to kind of do a little bit more of an evaluation, whereas you go into a game in the SEC schedule and you say, that guy caught a touchdown pass against Georgia. Good play, right? It's a little bit different. So receiver is one of the biggest question marks on this team. So naturally, we're going to leave the spring game and have, I think, some takeaways. How did Jared Brown look? How did Gage look? Et cetera, et cetera. I would also look at, you know, the defensive line, something that I'm starting to become a little bit more convicted of is I think this defensive line, I'm sure that they're going to be better than last year. I think I'm there. How much better? I don't think we'll know until the season, because you have kind of similar questions about the Gamecocks O-line. But we know that the defensive line has been looking pretty good this spring. How good? You know, and I think we'll be able to see the most that we've seen so far in terms of just front versus front, you know, and that's kind of what I really want to see.
Did you guys see what Ole Miss did with their spring game over the weekend, what they kind of turned that into? So they did like 7-on-7
game. Did they all just hang out on the Grove and drink instead of going to the game? Well, is
not
that what it was?
Not quite, but they did. They kind of turned it into like what the Pro Bowl does with the like skills challenges. They had like a dunk contest, like tug of war. They had Joey Chestnut eating hot dogs at halftime. Like they kind of took the idea of a spring game and kind of turned it into more of like a, I don't know, it was still like a game with the 7-on-7 thing, but more of like a event than what we kind of know spring games to be, where people kind of lose interest by the third quarter and start trying to beat the traffic and stuff like that. I don't know. I thought it was an interesting way of going about it.
Yeah, I think that's cool. I think you're always looking for ways to kind of keep your fan base entertained, keep your fans involved. I mean, we've seen South Carolina do concerts before. We've seen Georgia. Didn't Georgia have Ludacris?
Yeah.
At one point, I'm sure you would know, Tyler.
There's lots.
Who has Georgia had?
It was the 2016 93K day. There's a lot of stories behind that Ludacris concert, by the way, that I can't share online.
Tyler, do you also know all the concerts from Georgia? Like Tyler knows all the years and things that happened in each year.
Well, it's like I went there or something.
Very enviable. No, but not on that wrestling and all that.
I know things.
By the way, did you see our guy Trick Williams was on SportsCenter?
Yeah, he won the main event of Stand and Deliver the other weekend. It's a big deal.
Pretty cool.
He's killing it. Got to get him on here one day.
It's going to happen.
Yeah.
We're going to make it happen.
He has stories, too, from Gamecock football. I don't know if he'll tell any of them, but he has some.
We can get some out of them.
Yeah.
We'll do our best. But no, I thought it was interesting what Ole Miss did. I think that's a very Lane Kiffin-esque way to go about changing the spring game, because we talk so much about like, oh, well, you know, maybe play a Wofford or a Furman or something like that, have an FCS opponent in your spring game to give it a little more of a legitimate competition. That's swinging the complete other way of making it more of an entertainment type of deal. But hey, getting a lot of involvement, the players seem to have fun, and at the end of the day, nobody got hurt. So that's the most important thing.
Yeah, well, I think if you're going to talk about spring games too, the number one, two, and three biggest priority for Saturday is to keep everybody healthy. Every single time, every single year, you just don't want to be having that conversation. You know there are going to be bumps and bruises. That's football. You don't want to be having the conversation that we had last year, Jalen Nichols. I mean, it's a different season for South Carolina. If, in my opinion, they have that veteran guy at left tackle, not that he was even necessarily a franchise future NFL left tackle, but I think would have set you up for, hey, here's our five. Here's who's going out there game one, and we know what that looks like. So you don't want to be sitting here. We don't want to be sitting here on Monday talking about the spring game and saying blah, 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 but so-and-so got hurt. That's worst-case scenario.
Absolutely. Good weekend for Gamecock baseball down there in Gainesville. We'll dive into that coming up next as the Gamecock Central Takeover Hour presented by Firehouse Subs rolls along here on your Monday on the game.
Another fastball, and this one's cranked to deep right field. Chasing back is Evans at the wall, watching it over the wall. Ethan Petrie answers Jack Caglione with one of his own, turns 95 around and sends it over the wall in right field, and the Gamecocks respond to the five spot by the Gators in the second inning with a two-run homer by Petrie here in the top of the third. It's 5-3 now, Florida.
Welcome back in at Gamecock Central Takeover Hour presented by Firehouse Subs. Tyler West Mitchell, Chris Clark along with you. That was the call yesterday. Ethan Petrie hitting his second home run of the weekend for the Gamecocks. Unfortunately, Gamecocks falling 11-9 to Florida yesterday, but winning the first two games of the series on Friday and Saturday, picking up the series victory. Only their second series victory of SEC play, the other one being that one against Vanderbilt. And for nothing else more than momentum, good for South Carolina to get back in the win column there, 8-7 overall in conference play as they get set for a daunting task of Arkansas and Kentucky in the back-to-back weekends coming up here starting this weekend against Arkansas.
Yeah, it was a good week for South Carolina for all the feeling that this season is like over, I think, from some people in the fan base. This team now sits here. You're halfway through SEC play, 25-11 overall, 8-7 in conference play. And last week you get a big neutral site win over North Carolina, which is obviously always a strong program. And then you got a series win over Florida at Florida. And so I think Florida is sitting there. That's not the results we're used to seeing from the Gators, I think, just overall this season. But it's still hard to go in there and win. And so you took care of business. You kind of had some come-from-behind opportunities there. Get a big win on Saturday. Almost pull out a big come-from-behind win on Sunday as well. It's so hard to sweep an SEC team at their place. You would have loved to maybe sneak one more, but that's always SEC ball, I think. Anytime you're looking back, much like South Carolina was kind of, dominated in a couple series, but then able to steal one on Sunday themselves to stay on track, it was the opposite this week. But when you look at the RPI, when you look at the strength of schedule, everything is actually still ahead and available for this South Carolina team. So I'm not going to sit here and say your eyes deceive you. Like, this team has not been what you wanted it to be overall. There are still question marks. They're still trying to figure out the best way to slot this pitching staff, I think. But the bats have come along a little bit, and there are signs of life for what this team could accomplish down the stretch. But again, like Tyler said, the schedule remains brutal.
Yeah, and I mean, you just look. Some of the teams that South Carolina has lost to are really good also. You know, I mean, Clemson has turned out to be a really, really good team. Texas A&M, last seen shutting out Vandy twice and outscoring them 36-6 on the weekend. Vanderbilt's still in the top five, and Texas A&M just swept them, right? Gamecocks also swept Vanderbilt. So, you're right, I think, Wes. It's been uneven, right? You still have questions. You're starting to develop some answers in some areas, which is good. Before you lost yesterday, you were on, what, a four-game win streak against top 25 teams. That's good. That's hard to do. The question is obviously, how can you finish? It's very hard to say, no matter where you fall on things. You may be a person that just, hey, I'm going to watch the rest of the season, see how it plays out, and then I'll form my opinion. You may be saying, I think we're about to make a big run. You might be saying, have the most negative view ever and say, I don't like what I've seen at all. No matter where you fall, like, objectively, if you look at it, I agree with you, Wes, everything is still in front of you. You know, you're hovering close to 500 in conference play. Last year's team that made it to a super, you know, here's the thing. They started out hot. I think they were like 13-4 in conference, and then they ended up dropping their last four series. This time, you know, you've won some series, you've lost several series, you've got a tough road ahead, but the difference, you know, the determining factor is going to be how do you do in these last series, and that's really going to set up the rest of the year.
Yeah, and I think it's kind of the opposite right now of men's basketball and how for much of the year, and as they sort of stacked wins, the fan base was sort of like, hey, why aren't you ranking us in the top 25? Why do these metrics hate South Carolina? This is the exact opposite. South Carolina is sitting there number 15 in the country in the RPI, and I think the fans who watch this team often are like, oh, we're not a top 15 team. that's not right. And I do think there's a little, call it what it is, there's a little Kingston fatigue from the fan base, even though this is a team that went to a super regional last year. So, that's not always fair necessarily. But to me, everything is ahead of you. And I look at some of what feels like, Chris, I think you used the word uneven. Some of what feels like this team plays uneven is that, all right, Clemson is number one in the country in the RPI. Texas A&M is number two in the country in the RPI. Ole Miss, a series you lost, but really, frankly, we're right there in a couple of games. That was on the road. They're 29th in the RPI. I mean, some of this, you know, Alabama is now 18th in the country in the RPI. You had to go to Alabama. They're 18-4 at home. So I think for South Carolina, some of this is just, this is baseball. You're playing really some great teams week in, week out. Even in the midweeks, there was who beat them? Georgia Southern?
Southern, yeah.
Yeah, that one was ugly. But otherwise, I mean, and now you look ahead, Arkansas, Frank, you know, they're sixth in the RPI, but they may be the most talented team in the league potentially. And Kentucky has come out of nowhere and is having an insane season right now.
Yeah, a lot. I mean, the competition's tremendous. And so, you know, I think some people are going to, like you said, Wes, some people look at it through the prism of Mark Kingston has not been back to Omaha. That's all I care about. And so this is going to be a repeat of past years. Okay. If that's how you see it, that is fine. But we do have to play out the rest of the year, right? The way I look at it is you've got to get in position. Can you get in position where you can host a regional? If you do that, if you do what you did last year, host a regional, you got to go on the road for a super. Okay, you know, go win. You know, it's hard to just do the win anyway mentality when you play, you know, every team you play seems to be in the top 10, if not the top 20. There's some truth to that. But, you know, you're going to have some ups and downs in there. And so, you know, the key is can they go win some series here at the end and get themselves in position to achieve those goals?
Yeah, and I think you've got to get a little bit more consistency from certain guys on your pitching staff. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the pitching, and this is in no way a shot at the pitching staff because they've outperformed expectations overall. And I think Matt Williams has done a fantastic job with them. It's just more so they have continued to have to sort of tinker with who's going out there in this role. I think ultimately you would love down the stretch and then getting into postseason for those roles to get more defined. Now, the only way to do that is for guys to perform when they are put in those roles. There were some really positive signs this weekend. Then there were some things that weren't quite as positive as you look at just giving up the amount of runs they did game two and game three to Florida. The North Carolina pitching in the midweek against those guys on a neutral site, some really encouraging things. And then I think this offense has sort of started to pick it up for a couple of reasons. Dalton Reeves has kind of come, frankly, out of nowhere, springboarded off of that big game against his former team in PC, and now has just refused to exit the lineup. And, you know, I think you look at the job that Messina has done lately. I think he and Parker Nolan are both on 13-game hitting streaks. Nolan really was a guy you brought in as a veteran that you thought could be a good, solid presence for you at the top of the lineup, and struggled off the bat, to be honest, but has really locked in as of late. I think that's big for you. And then one more guy that I think we got to circle. Eli Jones bounced back from probably the worst start of his career and was really, really good against Florida on Friday. If you're going to make a run, if you're going to be good during these final five series in the SEC, you got to have Eli Jones at his best. And that was a great bounce back for him, not to let anything linger from the week before.
Yeah, absolutely. Good bounce back for him. Six innings, five hits, and one run for Florida against Florida on Friday night, getting their first Friday win since beating Vanderbilt in that series a couple weeks back. And again, we'll take on Arkansas this upcoming weekend. Citadel tomorrow night, going on the road down to Charleston for a 7 o'clock first pitch pregame coverage starting at 6:45 right here on The Game. We'll come back and wrap up today's edition of the Gamecock Central Takeover Hour presented by Firehouse Subs. A couple of recruiting notes, not only in football, but in basketball as well. Hit those to close out today's show. Coming up next here on The Game. Terry Ford coming up at the top of the hour. Some recruiting things to hit on. Go into the weekend. Got a welcome home. This one ended up being Anthony Addison, 2025 Edge prospect to add to the 2025 class that continues to grow. Also got another welcome home from Beamer last night. Don't know the exact details on that one just yet, but as we go back to right about a week ago, this 2025 class really started to come together and just more and more pieces getting added to it now.
Yeah, this is a kid in Addison who I think from the moment South Carolina offered, it was going to be hard for anybody else to beat them on him. And you know, it was a special moment for him. He got offered in person at the Clemson game this past year, you know, when South Carolina hosts Clemson. And I think you look at what South Carolina's done at Sumter High the last, I would say the last few years, but really even dating before that. When they have wanted guys from Sumter, for the most part, that's been an area that they could recruit pretty well and succeed on. And so Sterling Lucas identified him. He's someone who, you know, I think kind of has a lot of the, to steal Charles Powers' words and favorite kind of phrases, he's got the markers and the indicators of a pass rusher that you're looking for. I think the one thing keeping him right on the edge right now as a high three-star instead of a four-star is you're kind of wanting to see, can he stack enough weight on that frame? And that's something I know Chris talked to his head coach, and he believes he can. And he actually is a little bit young for his grade as well, so that maybe speaks to there still being some more physical growth here ahead. Obviously, when these guys get into college strength and conditioning and nutrition programs, they tend to put on that weight. But you're talking about a pretty high barrier to get into that four-star territory. And productive kid at the high school level, plays really, they play like a three-man front a lot of time at Sumter, so he's not really allowed to get out there completely on the edge and rush the passer, like I think is probably maybe where his skill set best fits. But I think a good solid in-state pickup for South Carolina and helps them start to fill out that depth chart for this class at the edge position as they also recruit some kind of more national guys from out of state at that spot.
Yeah, they're after some big fish, you know, at the edge position. A guy like Jared Smith from Alabama, who's, you know, Georgia and everybody else is after, is a top 50 guy. But Addison as an in-state guy is nonetheless, you know, an important piece. If you offer him and you feel like you want him, you know, go get him, right? And so Mark Barnes, the head coach at Sumter that Wes just referenced, this guy's been a coach for a long time. I mean, he coached Travian Robertson, actually, at Scotland County in North Carolina. Coached, you know, Jonathan Bullard, who played at Florida and then ended up going to the NFL. He's coached several, O'Donnell Fortune, obviously. There's a long list. So I think this guy knows talent. And, you know, I actually brought up the weight thing to him because we saw Anthony Addison last summer at South Carolina's camp. And, you know, as I've said, the quickness really, really stands out. I mean, he was out there pass rushing in a camp setting, and you're like, this guy is quick and fast. You know, he's a twitchy type of player. But you look, you know, how big can he get? And so I even brought that up to Barnes. I said, hey, I know he's not going to be a big, you know, 265, 270-pound guy. And he says, well, you know, I don't know that he can't. He said he probably won't be that. But I think it will be easy for him to get if they want him to be 245, 250 pounds once he gets to the college, you know, strength program, gets the nutrition going, all that, those types of things. So you start to think about that. You have those indicators, like you said, Wes. But then can you, you know, if you can keep those traits and add more weight, then you're talking about a very intriguing prospect.
One more note to throw in here, this on the basketball front. Cam Scott, who, of course, South Carolina was in the running to get, local kid out of Lexington who had committed to Texas back in August, has requested his release from his national letter of intent from the Longhorns. So back on the market as far as recruiting goes, 6'6" shooting guard who won the Gatorade State Player of the Year this past year, now looking for a new home for, you know, where he's going to play his college ball.
Yeah, and I think in this situation, so leaning again on Jamie Shaw there, as of right now, unless something has changed this morning, and maybe it has, maybe it will today, he has been released from his national letter of intent, but when you sign that, you also sign a financial aid agreement. So has not been released from that yet, according to Jamie, which means basically you're waiting for the complete release to be processed and handled and approved and all that stuff. So I think everybody's so used to the transfer portal, we had people just assuming he's at Texas already and that this would be a potential transfer situation. He's not actually arrived at Texas yet. He signed with them, has not been in their program yet, so it's a different process logistically for him. So as of right now, South Carolina cannot contact him until any of that is official. But I mean, being a Lexington guy, being number 35 overall prospect in the country, and then, wow, you have to replace your two guard from last year, and you have one of the best two guards in the country. literally right down the road from where we sit right now, you can make a pretty safe bet that the Gamecocks are going to reach out here.
Yeah, at least make a run at him. Again, obviously somebody that was very sought after being a four-star guy in this past cycle.
And highly considered South Carolina,
highly considered South
Highly
Carolina.
Considered. So,
yeah, his final group was obviously Texas, Oregon, Alabama, Auburn, Carolina, and Ole Miss in there as well. So, you know, we'll see if something potentially good can come from this, you know, on the South Carolina standpoint.